There's a medrash that says the following. We know that there are three kinds of tzaras. Whatever this... That was very fast. That was an engagement party, no? I couldn't resist.
The baby cries. He says, "They've just got engaged."
Time flies, as they say.
Okay, let's start again. There are three kinds of tzaras general. One that affects a person's skin, body. The other that affects his clothing. And the third kind that affects homes, houses. And the Medrash says that it is hard for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to punish people. Doesn't like to punish people. And therefore, he first warns a person by sending the tzaras to his house. If that helps, fine. If it doesn't help, then he gets a little bit closer and sends it to his clothing. If that helps, fine. If that doesn't help, then he gets him in his actual body. That is the Medrash. There's only one problem with that. If you look in the Torah, the order is the opposite. In Parshas Tazria, the Torah first speaks about tzaras that affects your body. In the end of Tazria, it speaks about tzaras that affects your clothing. And in the middle of Metzora, the next Sedra, it talks about tzaras that affects your house. So if the order is the opposite, why is the Torah presented in a different order? So some say that in actuality, it happens in the order that we said in the beginning. Houses, clothing, then the person. However, when God warns us, he tells us the following. You should know that if you're going to speak Lashon Hara, right, I'm going to really have to get you right away in the body. But I'm not going to do that. Right? I'm going to hold it off, and I'm going to give it in your clothing. And even that I'm not going to do right away. I'm going to give you a present and start with your house. But if it doesn't work, then the order will be reversed, the house, then the clothing, then the body. So when it's talking about warning us, which is learning the Torah, there God warns us, this is what really should be. But I'm going to do you a favor and do it physically the other way. Okay, that's one answer. I have a different answer, completely different answer. And that is the following. We normally think the idea is that person commits a sin, and God starts with his house, then his clothing, then his body, but it's not the same sin. We'll see in one second what we're talking about. This interesting Kliyoker. The Kliyoker says that even though we know that tzaras comes for Lashon Hara, but that, the Kliyoker says at least, is the tzaras that affects a person's body. The tzaras that affects one's clothing comes from a different sin. Gashas haruach, gaiva, haughtiness. And the tzaras that affects a person's house comes from a different sin. And that sin is chemdas hamama, that a person is too, likes money too much, and he's stingy. Now, the only problem with that is that it doesn't fit this medrash, because it's different sins. So it's not a question of getting your body first or your house first or your clothing first. Completely different sins, and that's why one affects your clothing, one affects the house, or whatever. It's interesting, the Kliyoker says also, that's why the Kohen is the one who is involved in remedying the tzaras. Because what were the midos, the characteristics of the Kohanim, of Aaron HaKohen? First of all, he was an Ohev Shalom. He loved peace, which counteracted Lashon Hara, which usually causes strife, machlokas, hatred, and so on. He also was a very humble person, Aaron HaKohen, so that counteracts haughtiness. And the Kohanim didn't have much They didn't have a share in Eretz Yisrael. They didn't have a share in the booty. They were supported by Klal Yisrael with Trumas and Maestras. They were very satisfied with a small amount. They weren't very, very much running after money, and therefore weren't stingy people. So they had all the midos that negated the sins that caused the various kinds of Lashon Hara. That's the Kliyakar. I want to change this Kliyakar a little bit, but use what he says, but in a little bit different way than he says it. And that's the following. Really, the sin of Lashon Hara is the sin that that underlines or that is the underpinning of all tzoras, the house, the clothing, or whatever. However, Lashon Hara has different causes. Why a person speaks Lashon Hara? The first kind of cause can be a very external cause. And that is, a person sees that other people have things. He's jealous. He's stingy of what he has. Those are external causes. That's one kind of thing. Then it can be that a person has bad character traits, and his bad character leads him to Lashon Hara. And the third thing is where the person is, in essence, a bad person, and he's a Baal Lashon Hara, and he speaks Lashon Hara because, not just because his character traits aren't good, not because of circumstances surrounding him, but because intrinsically he is, in essence, a bad person who wants to malign other people or whatever. Now, obviously, the degree of sin is different. If a person is, in essence, good, and even his character is good, but sometimes external causes, jealousy, things that he sees that other people have or whatever, get up his ire and cause him to speak Lashon Hara, then that's a totally external thing. Okay. If, on the other hand, he has bad midos, that's more closer to his essence, but it's not his essence. It's like his clothing. And if your essence is no good, that means that's part of what you are. Therefore, that's what it means. The Rabban Shalom, in the beginning, when a person sins, he doesn't immediately become a rotten person. It goes gradually. First thing, he lets himself open to external influences. So God doesn't punish him in body, nor in his clothing, because basically his sin is caused by external things. That's like the house. So it would be enough to give him an external incentive to repent. If it stops there, then that's fine. But if it doesn't stop there, then when a person commits a sin more than once, he's been warned, he ignored the warning, then it becomes more entrenched within him. An example to this would be an Eved Ivri, right? A person steals or he sells himself as a slave. That's a sin. So the atonement for that sin is he has to work for 6 years as a slave, and hopefully he'll learn his lesson. But if at the end of the 6 years he doesn't want to go out and he wants to continue being a slave, then we pierce his ear and he has to work till Yovel, till the Jubilee year. Why? Because the first time you do the sin, it's very external, peripheral. It's enough, you worked and you finished. But if you repeat that sin, then it becomes much more entrenched within you. Then we pierce your ear, we show you there's something wrong with you. It's not just circumstances that cause you to sin. There's something intrinsically wrong with you, and then the sin becomes much greater. Same thing over here. God says, look, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt that if you've done this sin because of external incentives, you're jealous of somebody else, somebody else has money, you have money, you don't want to give it up, it's not you, it's external things that caused you to do this. So therefore, it's enough to give you the warning in an external thing, in your house. If you get the lesson, you get the message, and you stop, then that's where it ends. But if you don't get the message and you continue speaking Lashon Hara, then it's not merely external things that bring you to it. It's something that's gone already more internal. And it's a sign that your midos, your your character traits are not good. That already is the idea of haughtiness. You're a haughty person. And that brings you to speak negatively about other people. You look down on other people. You speak condescendingly about them. You want to make yourself greater by knocking other people down. So then the sin is already compounded. It already affects your character. Now, character traits are compared to clothing. It's something that a person clothes himself in, his character. So therefore, God then gets a little bit closer to you and affects your clothing. If you get the message and it ends there, fine. But if it continues on, then it goes much deeper. And already if you compound the sin after that, then it's part of your essence. And you become a person who is, in essence, a Baal Lashon Hara. And then it hits your body. That is the sequence. So it's not just a matter that's the same sin and God just starts with whatever. The sin is different causes to the same sin, and therefore different punishments that fit the cause on the level that it's on. And therefore, when the Torah speaks about Lashon Hara, it tells you Lashon Hara is something that eventually will affect your essence and your midos and external things. That's what Lashon Hara is. It's possible that if you're not into it yet, it's only going to affect peripherally external, more internal, more internal. So the way that it works actually is the opposite way. But when God tells us the seriousness of the sin, he first portrays to us what it really is, right? And all of its ramifications, even though when a person gets into it, he gets into it slowly. But this is what the sin ultimately is going to be. So the Torah gives us an understanding of what the sin is in its essence, and that is it affects your body, it affects your midos, which is your clothing, and it affects your surroundings. But I'm going to take it as it comes, and usually it comes from the lighter to the more serious. Okay, so that is this idea. Now, if that's the case, then it works the same way for the good, even more so. Whatever affects us in a bad way has the same kind of effect in a good way, only even more intense, because what happens for the good is greater than what happens for the bad. And if averas and bad things become slowly entrenched in a person's surroundings, then his character, and then his essence, so that's the way that good things have to be, mitzvahs and good qualities. You start off where there are external things that bring you to Torah and mitzvahs. Mitoshalo lishma balishma. Person, wants to get covered. Right, he wants to get recognition, whatever it may be, right? Money, whatever it may be, external stimuli for doing good. Mitoshalo lishma balishma. There's nothing wrong with that, right? That's how you start out. You start out with external things, then it affects you and it makes you a better person. Your character becomes better, and you want to do the mitzvahs for the right reasons, and eventually it becomes mamish part of you. Torah learning is the same thing. Person can learn Torah for external incentives. Mitoshalo lishma balishma. And then the Torah itself has midos, shatorah niknes bohem. Right? You acquire the Torah with good character, and it becomes part of your character until the Torah makes you like a living sefer Torah, and it becomes part of your essence. And the truth is that during Sfiras HaOmer, when we are preparing to re-receive the Torah every year, so we go through all three things. The Sfiras HaOmer has in it all these three things. We count the Sfira, and after that, the custom is to say a kapitel of Tehillim called Lamnatzeach Beneginos Mizmor Shir, okay, which has from the second sentence on 49 words, and the middle sentence Yismachu V'Yiranenu Le'umim has 49 letters. So every day corresponds to another word from this chapter of Tehillim, and every day corresponds to another letter from that middle sentence of Yismachu V'Yiranenu Le'umim. That kapitel basically speaks about the idea of the environment that is conducive to keeping the Torah. That kapitel is meant to be portrayed as a menorah. The seven sentences that comprise that chapter are many times depicted as the branches of a menorah. And there's Kabbalistic meaning to why specifically this pasuk refers to the light of the menorah. But on a very simple level, the Mizmor says, L'Maseach B'Neginos Mizmor L'David, what's it called? Hashem Yechonenu V'Yivorchenu, Yo'er Ponov Itonu Sala. We look for God's face to shine upon us, to illuminate us, right? And it speaks about all the nations of the world recognizing God. It's talking basically about the illumination of the world with God's light, where all the nations will recognize God's existence. So it's talking about the positive external stimulus, the environment that is conducive to learning Torah and keeping mitzvahs. That's the first thing we speak about. Then we say Ona B'Koach, which is the first letters of those words. Ona, the Aleph, B'Koach, Beis, Gedulas, Gimel. Those are 42 letters, the 42 words there. The 42 letters represent God's name of 42 letters. One of God's names is a name of 42 letters. And it's made up of either 14 combinations of three letters, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, and then that's Ona B'Koach Gedulas, Yemincha, Tater, Tzura, Yud, Tov, Tzadik. So they go in groups of three letters, and each one is a different portion of God's name, and there are 14 portions. Or it's seven groups of six letter groups. Meaning the first group is Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Yud, Tov, Tzadik, and so on. And the first letters of these words spell those 42-letter name of God. Now, I'm not a Kabbalist, so I can't really tell you what the 42-letter name of God means, what its significance is, but I can tell you one idea. The number 42, especially if you look at it as seven groupings of six letters each, the number seven represents the perfection of time. Whenever we want to have a complete time in this world, we have seven. 7 days of marriage, 7 days of mourning, right? 7 days of yontif. 7 days is a complete unit of time. So seven represents the perfection of time. 7 days of creation, including Shabbos. Six represents the perfection of place, space. Why? Four directions, north, east, south, and west, and up and down. Six directions. So the completion of place is six, the completion of time is seven. Seven times six is 42. It shows God's permeates space and time. But that's the idea of the environment. The ultimate environment of God's presence in the world is this idea of God's name of 42 letters, but it's more than that. It's God's permeates everything, space and time, and therefore becomes part of a person is created in God's image, and this is God's name, which is God's kibiyachol, his essence, and therefore it represents the Torah becoming part of the essence of the person, space, time, everything coalescing to perfection, where the Torah and the person bond. That's the essence of Torah. And then every day represents a different character trait of God that we're supposed to emulate. There's seven basic character traits, seven spheros, chesed, gevura, tiferes, netzach, hod, yesod, and malchus. Those are seven character traits, and each one has in it all seven. Chesed is chesed of chesed, and gevura of chesed, and tiferes of chesed, and Netzach of Chesed, and Hod of Chesed, and Yesod of Chesed, and Malchus of Chesed. So each day is a different variation of one of those seven character traits. So here again we have this third aspect, that the Torah should affect our character. So we have Torah affecting the environment, around us, Torah affecting our essence, and Torah affecting our character traits. That is the preparation, because just like evil goes on three levels, external stimuli, character, and essence, the good also works on those three levels. Okay, if that's the case, then I was thinking that's why the students of Rabbi Akiva died during this time, and why we mourn them specifically, even though there were a lot of tzaris in Klal Yisrael that we don't commemorate. Why dafka this one? There are many great people who died, even what's it called, groups of great people, and we don't commemorate their death at all. And these 24,000 students we do commemorate for 33 days. So the idea is that the students of Rabbi Akiva not just prepared for their yearly receiving of the Torah, but they were supposed to be preparing to be the receivers of the Torah from the previous generation and those who would be responsible to pass it on to future generations. How do I know that? Because ultimately, Rabbi Akiva's students who survived, and there are only five of them out of 24,000, the five of his students that survived were the conduit. They were the pipeline of all of the oral tradition came through them. They were the ones who composed the Safra, the Sifri. They compiled all of the oral Torah on the various Chumashim, and there each one was a conduit to pass on the oral Torah to the next generation. Every generation had in it the people. Some generations it was one person, some generations it was two people, some generations were a lot of people. As it got farther and farther away, you need more people to be the ones who are responsible to pass on the tradition, the Torah, to the next generation. And Rabbi Akiva's students were to have that tafkid, that purpose, okay, that role to play. So therefore, they had to prepare themselves in three ways. They had to prepare that the environment would be conducive to receiving the Torah and passing it on. They had to prepare that their midos, that their character traits, were the kind of character traits that would enable them to be the people who are responsible to passing on the Torah, who could receive the Torah and pass it on. And they had to, in essence, become living Sifrei Torah, who then could impart their essence to the Jewish people. They needed, on all three levels, to be the receivers of Torah in environment, in character traits, and in essence. And they blemished every single one of these areas. Of course, on their level, they were great people. But what is the three sins that the rabbis tell us that was the cause of the death of the students of Rabbi Akiva? There are three medrashim. The most famous is Lo Nohagu Kovod Zebezeh. They didn't treat each other with the proper respect. Okay? And that doesn't mean that they treated each other disrespectfully, because that is not what it says. They were great people. But on their level, they should have treated each other more respectfully. They didn't treat each other with the proper respect, not that they treated each other disrespectfully. It wasn't a negative, it just wasn't as much positive. It's one sin. Second sin, the Medrash says that they didn't spread their Torah to the whole of Eretz Israel. They didn't fill the land of Israel with Torah. They didn't go around and teach Torah and see to it that every person knew Torah. They didn't set up a system where the entire Eretz Yisrael could be filled with Torah. And the third sin is they didn't share their Torah one with another. They kept it to themselves. They didn't share their Torah with each other. If you think about it, each of these things represents a different aspect of what it means to receive the Torah, to be the receivers of the Torah. We do it in a small way, to receive the Torah every year, a yearly reception of the Torah, so we have to prepare ourselves with Sefiras HaOmer. But they were doing it as their life's purpose, as their life's goal, every day of the year. And they didn't do it properly on three levels. The first level is they didn't fill Eretz Yisrael with Torah. They didn't create the right environment for giving Torah and for receiving Torah and for giving it over. Second thing is they didn't treat each other with the proper respect. Their midos were not the kind of midos that were the perfection of midos. There was something missing in their character traits. And lastly, they didn't share their Torah one with the other. That was something that the essence of Torah is lilmod amanas lamed. That the Marsha says, the Pasuk says, Adam le'omol yulod, a person was created to toil in Torah. And the word le'omol, lamed ayin, mem lamed, is an abbreviation of lilmod amanas lamed. To learn with the intention of teaching. That doesn't mean that everybody has to be a teacher. But it means that you can't keep the Torah that you learn to yourself. You must share it with others. You could share it with a friend, with a family member, with a neighbor. But you can't keep it to yourself. If you have the ability, you must share it with others. Because that's what Torah is. Torah is not the domain of any individual. It was given to people to share. God shared himself with us by giving us his Torah. So a person has a responsibility to be part of the cloud. Torah is only possible when everybody is together. Everybody has their portion in Torah. And together there's perfection. So unless people share their portion with others, there's something missing in the essence of what Torah is. That's why it says, Shnayim Sheyoshvim in Pirkei Avos. Ve'ein beinayim divrei Torah. And some of the commentaries learn, two people are sitting, and there's no Torah between them. Not that they're not learning Torah. Each one's learning by himself, but there's no discourse between them of Torah. They're not sharing their Torah one with the other. They're learning it totally oblivious of the other person. Hareza Moshev Leitzin. That is a Moshev Leitzin. Moshev Leitzin means it's something devoid of any holiness. A Letz is the worst kind of person. And they're learning Torah. But the essence of their Torah is blemished. Because Torah was meant to be something that people don't only get as something as their own acquisition. It's something that is shared by all of the Jewish people. Just like God shares himself with us, we have to share him with others also and unite the Jewish people through Torah. So there's something missing in the essence of what Torah is if you don't share it with others. So they blemished all three areas. They didn't share their Torah one with the other, which is a blemish in the essence of what Torah is in the person. They didn't fill Eretz Yisrael with Torah, which is a blemish in the environment that Torah has to create. And they didn't respect each other properly, is a blemish in their character. So because Torah has to affect all three areas, just like sins affect all three areas, Torah has to affect all three areas. And during Sfiras HaOmer, in our little way, that we are re-receiving the Torah every year, we prepare ourselves, like we said, in all three areas. And these people were the people who were supposed to be the receivers of Torah for that generation, to pass it on to the next generation. Their whole life was a Sfiras HaOmer, was preparing to be the receiver of Torah. And they blemished it, so they died specifically during Sfiras HaOmer, when everybody's involved in a small way of achieving that, so it should be clear why they died. And when we mourn for them, it helps us to understand what in our small way we're supposed to be doing during Sfiras HaOmer. So what they couldn't do in their lifetime, through their death, they taught each and every one how to be a receiver of the Torah in a small way, to be able to re-receive the Torah on our yearly re-receiving of the Torah. So that is the... And could be that's the reason why the ways that we mourn for the students of Rabbi Akiva is basically three things. We don't make weddings, we don't take haircuts, and we don't sing and dance. Those are pretty much the three areas that the mourning takes. If you think about it, they also represent these three ideas. The idea of not making weddings. A wedding is something that completes the essence of a person. A person's a half a person until he's married. It's just husband and wife together are a complete human being, and that's the essence of the person. So we don't get married during this time, because something was missing in the essence of what they represented in Torah. And we don't listen to music or dance because that's the environment. We don't want to have a happy environment. Something's missing in the environment. And we don't take a haircut or shave because that's the idea, just like midos, character traits, are the clothing that a person wears as similar to hair, right, being orderly, disheveled, right, is something that the person dresses in. His hair and his beard are also external but connected to the person, similar to clothing. That's the third kind of mourning. So it all revolves around this same idea. The idea being that whether it's for good or for bad, a person has to deal with the Torah on three levels. He has to deal with it peripherally in the environment around him. He has to deal with it by his character traits and his essence. Those are the three levels of whether it's for the good or for the bad, and that's the way that a person has to be able to receive the Torah on a constant or yearly basis on all three levels. Okay, any questions on this?
Hold on a second.
Let me just see what's doing here. Second. Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't he know that something was going on in himself as a teacher?
Yeah, I assume that he tried to impress them. It just didn't work. He got through to five of them. Right? People say that they have many people who claim to be their students, but they don't have too many real students.
It's a fantastic analysis, but it's hard for me to see, you know, on a simple level, how it was built, and Pshat. The Pshat has no reference at all to the Kesher Ben, Tzarat, and any Midot at all, nothing. The Greek Torah itself, there's not even a hint of anything between Tzarat and what caused it.
The hint in the Torah is
the example of Miriam and so on later on. But I'm saying, specifically in the parashat, you know, the Sarat and so on, you don't see anything at all explaining to you, listen, if you do it, if you don't behave this way, this will happen to you, go on it. Why is that?
Why didn't the Torah specifically, the hint to it is, from the word mitzora, it is motzira, and the ways that it's atoned for hint to it.
It's hints. I mean, we have specific book, you know, God tells you exactly what to do and not to do. Here there's nothing. It doesn't say in the Torah, if you don't want to get sarat, don't do this, don't do that. Nothing. Why is that?
Good question. I'll tell you what I think of. It's a very good question. Because if the whole purpose of the tzaras is a educational lesson. Right? It's a lesson that you should learn your lesson, do tshuva. So why isn't it more explicit? It's a good question. And I'll tell you the answer. Let me start with something else, and it's a good enough question to spend some time on. There's a halacha in Saras that seems to be very difficult to understand. That's the following. If a person has a small blotch of tzaras on his flesh, then he's tameh, he's a mitzora, and he has to go out of the camp, and he's tameh like a dead person, and until it goes away. If that blotch covers his entire body from head to toe, then he's okay. The obvious question is, why? It doesn't make any sense. So there is a logical explanation some of the Rishonim say. They say like this, that when something is concentrated in one area, it can go deep. But when it spreads over a very large area, then it's usually very shallow. Shallow tzaras doesn't make the same impression as deep tzaras. Okay, that may be. But the Chofetz Chaim says a different idea. He says the whole purpose of tzaras is to give you a hint that something's wrong, that you should contemplate it. The time that you're away from people and your tameh gives you the incentive to do tshuva, to think. If you have a little blotch, you need time to think and to contemplate or whatever. But if your entire body from head to toe is covered with tzaras, you don't need any time to think, you don't need to be tameh, the lesson hits you between the eyes. Therefore, based on that, I'll say the following. This tzoras only hit people in a time when they were on a very, very high level. When God's presence was amongst the Jewish people, there was a Beis HaMikdash. When there's no Beis HaMikdash, these halachas don't apply. And the reason being that, let me give you another preface. We'll get to the answer in a few seconds, but you need a little bit of building blocks to understand it. There's a Gemara that says like this, that a group of people came from a certain city looking for a rabbi. They have a rabbi. So the Rosh Yeshiva, don't remember who it was, said, I have a student that fits the bill perfectly, Levi Ben Sisi. That was his name, Levi. I'm sending him to be a rabbi. So they were ecstatic. Well, they have this big Talmud Chacham that's coming to their city. They built a big bima for him, and they made a hachtara, an installation for the rabbi. And they put him up on this big bima, on a big throne, and they said, you know, we haven't had a rabbi for a long time. We have three major questions, halachic questions, hashkafa questions, that we haven't been able to answer. And now we have a rabbi, and they posed these three questions to him. He didn't have a clue what to answer. He said, no, on all three. So that night he was extremely embarrassed. So he ran back to the yeshiva. Snuck out of the city and ran back to the yeshiva. Gets up in the morning, and his Rosh Yeshiva sees him. He's by davening. So he says to him, what are you doing here? I sent you to be the rabbi in that place. He said, yeah, but they made this whole big installation for me. They asked me these three questions, and I had no idea what to say. He said, what are you talking about? You don't know the answers to those questions. He said, so he asked him the questions again, and he gave him all the answers. So I don't understand. If you knew the answers, why didn't you tell them? He said, I'll tell you what happened. They put me up on this throne, on this big stage, right? And I started to think, hey, I'm really somebody. And because I started to feel haughty, I forgot everything I ever learned. So my Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Gifter, asked, the haughtiness of Reb Levi Ben Sisi, right, would be considered by any one of us to be the highest level of humility. Okay? That's his haughtiness. Okay? And yet we remember all our Torah. Why don't we forget everything? Right? If the haughtiness on his level caused him to forget all his Torah learning, then how in the world do we remember anything? So he gave the following answer. He said, if a person is in very bright light. Now he's in a place where the light is extremely bright. And he walks into a regular room. What happens? He's immediately blinded. He can't see. Right? He can't see a thing. Because the difference between the bright light and the regular light makes it that his eyes got used to the real bright light. Now he can't see. But if he walks in from a dark cellar into that regular light, he'll be able to see right away. It won't affect it. He said, we're in a dark cellar all the time. We're always haughty. So it doesn't affect us to be a little bit more haughty. But somebody who's on that tremendous level of humility and a little haughtiness already blinds him. He forgets everything. Now, put those things together, the following. We're talking about people on a tremendously high level. Because the people who deserve to have their entire body full of tzaras don't need to become tameh. It's obvious. It's the people where it's not so obvious. They didn't speak Lashon Hara, you know, it was Lashon Hara that they spoke with all kinds of excuses and they thought it was a mitzvah or whatever. So they need time to contemplate and to think because it's a very subtle Lashon Hara. If you hit a person like that between the eyes with something open, and they don't have time to think, it's going to pass them by, they're not going to see it. Because this is not blatant Lashon Hara. We're talking about the great people. Where there's nuances, where there's very subtle things. In order to appreciate something subtle, you have to really think into it. Therefore, if the Torah would tell you openly, it wouldn't have any effect. It has to all be in subtle hints, where you have to come to it on your own, where you have to think, put your brain into motion, and then maybe you'll discover the sin and be able to do tshuva. But if it would be blatant things, then you could tell a person blatantly, you did this thing wrong, it's wrong, and finish and do something about it. That's what happens when the guy's whole body is with tzaras. Therefore, the same thing applies on the good side. A person sees tzitzis, so the tzitzis are colored blue. The blue is like the sea, and the sea is like the sky, and the sky is like God's throne. Why don't you say that this blue is like God's throne? What do you have to go? Because if you're just going to see the blue, you're not going to think about God's throne. You first have to put your mind into motion and start making what's it called, associations. The blue brings me to the sea. The sea brings me to the sky. The sky brings me. Once you think and you get your mind working, then it can make an effect on you. But if it's too open, right, then you don't have time to think. You're not going to make the associations. It's not going to make any impression on you. Same thing over here. We're talking about very subtle sins that if you're not going to think deeply, you're not going to get the message, and you're not going to discover what the sin was. And because we're talking about people on very high level. So therefore, the Torah didn't tell you openly. You're going to have to discover it for yourself. It's all subtle hints. But if you pay attention to the subtle hint, you'll come to the result. But if it's something that's open and obvious, then you can be told openly, and you don't need any subtle hints. You don't need time for thinking, and just, yes, you did something wrong, do something about it, and finish. For a person who sins in a very gross way, it's enough to tell them openly. For somebody who the sin is extremely subtle, extremely on a very sensitive level, he needs a lot of sensitive thought, and then it can't be just open between the eyes. It has to be something that the person is involved in and comes to on his own, from one hint to another hint, and works it out with his mind, and then can come to the result. I think off the top of my head, that could be the answer. Okay, it's a good question, I'll think about it, but I think that's a reasonable
It seems kind of an elitist kind of an answer, because the average person is not just a deep thinker. He needs to have a clear-cut direction, you know. He can't,
but we're not talking about the average person.
Meditate forever.
Right. The average person didn't get tzaras.
What?
Didn't need it. The average person, where the sin was open or whatever, right? It only affected Klal Yisrael when they were in a very high madriga and they weren't average people. Average people, there are many other things in the world that can. What? Yeah, but he speaks Lashon Hara in a very, what's it called? Not gross, what's the word I'm looking for? Very simple, what's it called? Obvious way, and the Musar, therefore, can be very nitty gritty, obvious, doesn't have to be any kind of high hints or whatever. That's the idea. Okay. Well, which brings us to another thing. So what is a person supposed to think about? Right? So when a person becomes tame with tzaras, he has to do the following things. What is part of his atonement or part of the correction of the sin? First thing is bodad yeshev. He has to separate himself from people and be alone outside the camp. Okay? Bodad yeshev, michutz l'machane. Why? Because one of the things that leads a person to speak Lashon Hara, as well as to other sins too, there are three major things that lead a person to sin. Taiva, kovid, right? Kina, taiva, and kovid. Jealousy, lust, and honor. Okay, and therefore, what's it called? The first thing that leads a person to speak Lashon Hara is taiva, right? Because it says if a lustful people don't want to have the company of other people around, because they want the whole pie for themselves. The pasuk says in Mishlei, "L'taiva yavakish nifrad." When a person is a lustful person, he wants to be alone. Doesn't want to share with anybody else. There are certain sins that you can't do alone. You need other people to help you do the sin, to get your to satisfy your lust. Right? Some of them are obvious. I'll tell you one that's not so obvious, just for the sake of tznius. Right? A bank robber. Right? He has a lust for money, and he wants to rob a bank and get millions of dollars on the spot, but he can't do it alone. Because you can't rob a bank alone. You need a getaway car, and you need a lookout, and you need the guy who's, you know, good in the explosives, and the guy who can pick the lock, whatever. Right? Not that I ever looked into this, but but from my earlier days of watching these things on a certain box, that's what it seems to be. So you need the company of other people, but you don't want to share the loot with them. So what happens after they get it is they kill each other off, each one trying to get the whole thing for themselves. So that's not called unity, right? That is called manipulating. That's not called unity, that's called manipulating other people. You're using them. And the same thing goes with other kinds of lust that people have, right? Where they're not interested in being together with other people, they just want to use other people to get what they need. So since people who want everything for themselves, right? So they're the kind of people that see that if other people have, then it's on their cheshbon, right? It bothers me that you have, because if you have, that means I could have had it. And therefore I speak Lashon Hara. So one of the causes of Lashon Hara is taiva. And therefore we say, you're about taiva, and a person who's taiva wants to be alone, fine, so you'll be alone. We'll put you to the extreme of being alone, let's see how you like it. Next thing, he has to tear his clothing, like an oval. Tears his clothing, he has to tear his clothing. Why? Covet. He said clothing represents the covet of a person. Dress nicely, that's the covet of, in fact it says that a person didn't call this, called his clothing bechabdusi, that which honors me. A person wears a uniform, shows who he is, what he is, gives him covet. A person who's looking always for covet can't stand it if somebody else gets covet. So therefore, we tell you, if covet, right, which is kina, which is jealousy, right, I'm jealous of somebody else's covet, right, if that brought you to speak Lashon Hara about other people, then tear your clothing and minimize your covet, and that'll help to be a kapara. Next thing he has to do, he has to go around and say, Tomei, Tomei, I'm Tomei, stay away from me. Warn people that he's Tomei. Why? Because people who speak Lashon Hara usually are looking for the bad in other people. Right? They're saying, you're Tomei. Right? You're no good. So, and they, but they don't see their own shortcomings, because al kol pshoim techasa ava. When you're in love with yourself, right, you don't see the shortcomings of people you're in love with. Everybody sees everybody's shortcomings except their own. So this person who speaks Lashon Hara is a person going around telling everybody what's tummy about them. So the Torah says, for a while, instead of telling other people what's tummy about them, you go around and tell people that you're tummy. You proclaim that you're tummy. See your own faults, don't see other people's faults. Because seeing other people's faults is what many times brings a person to Lashon Hara. And that comes from Sina, Piru, right? From hatred of other people. And when you hate somebody, all you see are their negatives. When you love somebody, you don't see anything negative about them. So most people love themselves, and they'll see nothing negative about themselves, and if they're the kind of people that hate everybody else, so then all they see is the negatives about other people. So this person has to go around and say he's Tommy. Next thing, he has to cover his mouth. Like, cover your mouth with a talus or whatever, like the Arabs cover their bottom of their face, all you see their eyes and their forehead, and the bottom of the face is covered. That the al-safa miyata, they cover it from their nose down. Why? Because a person like that doesn't appreciate how valuable speech is. So another thing that leads to Lashon Hara is speech is cheap. And when it's cheap, you use it for cheap things. If you'd appreciate how valuable speech is, you wouldn't waste it on things that are cheap and surely not things that are no good. Why? That's why when we finish Shemoneh Esrei, we say, Elokai Nitzor L'Sholim Eiro, we beg God, please, help me guard my tongue from evil. Why then? Why at the end of Shemoneh Esrei? So one idea I was thinking of is, after you use your mouth to converse with God, I mean, look how important speech is. You have the ability to talk to God. And he listens. So your mouth is a very, very respectable and very valuable tool. And now you want to take that valuable tool and drag it in the mud? Drag it in the garbage? And use it to speak evil? So you beg God, I realize now how important my mouth is. What I can accomplish with it, help me guard it from using it in a way that debases it and takes away its value. So therefore, a person who doesn't appreciate what you can accomplish with speech, so we make him cover his mouth. When something's important, you hide it, you protect it, right? You don't just leave it open, right? Because you realize that something important needs to be protected and guarded, right? So we make him cover his mouth so he understands how important speech is. And the next thing is, he can't take a haircut. Rosho parua. That is another reason. People get very much involved with their dainty appearance and all the comforts of life, creature comforts. And because of that, they take everything too seriously. Not everything in life is that important. There are many important things that are eternally important. And there's many things that are so unimportant that a person shouldn't occupy himself with it. And sometimes if a person makes everything important, then he is constantly hurt by this one or that one. I'll give you an example. There's a Torah prohibition of taking revenge. What's taking revenge? At a very simple monetary level. I go to somebody and I say, can I borrow your lawnmower? And he says, no, no way. I don't loan out my lawnmower. Can't have it. Nope. So I go and buy a lawnmower because this guy won't loan me his. And the next day, this guy comes and says, I heard you bought a lawnmower. He said, you know, mine broke. Could I borrow your lawnmower? He said, are you out of your mind? I only bought a lawnmower because you wouldn't loan me yours. You didn't loan me your lawnmower, I'm not loaning you my lawnmower. That's a Torah prohibition. You're not allowed to take revenge like that. If the reason you won't loan it to him because you think he'll break it, that's okay. But if the only reason, that's lo sikom, right? You're not allowed to take revenge. What's lo sitor? Not only can't you say to the guy, I'm not giving you the lawnmower because you didn't give me your lawnmower, you can't say, I'm going to give you the lawnmower because I'm not like you. You can't even say that. You have to forget about it and not hold it even in your heart. Says the Rambam, there are many reasons for this. One reason the Yerushalmi says. Yerushalmi says all Jews are interconnected. We're all really one soul. So you know what taking revenge on another Jew is like? It's you're hammering a nail with your right hand holding the hammer and your left hand holding a nail. And you missed a nail and you hit your thumb. What idiot would take the hammer his left hand and knock his right hand to take revenge? Right? You have to be an idiot or schizophrenic, one of the two. Right? But if you understand, they're both my hands, what am I taking revenge? Every Jew is interrelated. That's the Yerushalmi. But the Rambam says a different idea. The Rambam says there are too many important things in this world to occupy your mind with and not to occupy your mind and fill your gray matter in your brain cells. You only have a certain amount of gray matter in the brain cell of memory space. Don't fill it up with narishkeit. You shouldn't remember the guy didn't loan you the lawnmower. Who cares? There's more important things in this world to worry about than to hold that in your mind. And people are not like that. People hold these kind of grudges for years and years. They don't even remember what it is. When I went to Miami, can I say this in a way that you won't know who I'm talking about? Mr. Nemtsov is the president of the show. I think so. When I came to Miami, there were two, I don't think you were there yet, there were two, I won't mention the occupations of these people, there were two very distinguished balabatim who, when I came, people told me, these two people don't speak to each other. And they're both very influential, and each one has his clique. This is this one's clique, this one's that one's clique, and you got to choose who you're friendly with, because if you're friendly with this one, you're not friendly with that one or whatever. And they didn't speak to each other. This was for years before I came. But they were very influential people, very good people, and it hurt the community. So I decided I'm going to do something about this. I was too young to be and naive to realize that it worked in the end, surprisingly. In any case, had I been a little bit older, I wouldn't even attempt it. But in any case, what I did was, I invited them both to my office at the same time without telling them that the other one was going to be there. And they both came 10 o'clock, and they looked to see, what are you doing here? But I didn't give them a chance to run away, and they didn't come in, and I was still very fresh in the kehillah, so nobody was yet that chutzpahdik to walk away. The rabbi was still, you know, in the honeymoon time of the new rabbi. So they both came in and sat down, and I could see that they were ready to explode, sitting mamish in the same office next to each other. And I told them, I said, look, I understand that you have some kind of feud, you don't speak to each other, and it's tearing the community apart. Right? Let's see if we can figure out what the problem is over here and solve it. So I said, you know, let's flip a coin and see who talks first, and tell me what the problem, why don't you speak to so-and-so for years? So we flipped the coin, and one of them had the right to speak first, and I said to him, no, tell me, what do you have against so-and-so that you don't speak to him for years? Silence.
Forgot.
He said, I remember it was something important, I just can't remember exactly what it was. I said, okay, so then your turn now. You tell me why you don't speak to this guy. He said, yeah, I knew it was something important, I just don't remember exactly what it was. Both of them sit looking at me like they're the little children, right? Neither of them could remember what was so important that they haven't spoken to each other for years, but it must have been really important because they haven't spoken for years. And when they realized how ridiculous the situation was, they made up. Because they couldn't remember. So people keep these things in their mind. They don't even know what it is. So the Torah said, don't hold grudges. It's not worth remembering. The guy didn't loan his lawnmower. There's more important things to remember in this world. Therefore, for the time that you're a Metzora, sometimes people speak Lashon Hara because they take everything too much to heart. Their creature comforts are too important to them. How their hair looks and how their, what's it called, and if somebody musses them up a little bit, right, don't start up with me. But if you let your hair grow and you don't take a shave and you're not so careful about your appearance, so it gives you a good lesson for a while of not taking everything so seriously, especially when it comes to your own creature comfort, and that will also minimize Lashon Hara. So these are the things that a person goes through to help him contemplate where the sin came from, and eventually to do tshuva, and then the tzaras is cured.